Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we need ya.
Back here where we need ya.
Yeah, we need him a lot, cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Try to take over the world.
Of course!
All right. Good to be here with you, James Bostic. Conservative's Perspective. We do this through the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at the studios of Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. You can go there, type in Patriot Nation Radio, and you're going to find ACP doing a live version of the show Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We also have a recorded version of the program that goes out over the Talk America Radio Network, talkamericaradio.org. You go there, they have two audio streams available, and ACP can be heard on either one of those at varying times throughout the day and the week, along with a veritable plethora of outstanding podcasting and other talk show hosts. And we're happy to be there. Okay, lead segment tonight is a special concerning the West Virginia teachers strike. Who we have with us, I'm really happy about this. Tonight we have as a guest Caitlin Wills. Ms. Wills, president of the American Federation of Teachers Service Personnel Union here in Raleigh County. We're going to be talking about some of the more harmful facets of this remarkably flawed legislation. And one of the things, and what it is known as Senate Bill 41. The fundamental nuts and bolts of it, it was to be a 5% increase in a pay raise return, and there were supposed to be, excuse me, some financial resolutions in terms of the Public Employees Insurance Agency and some of the funding that goes on with that. Turned out to be a little bit more than that, and there's some things in the legislation that's just not good. And again, we have Katie Wills here to talk with us about that, and I'm getting ready to pull her up just a second. find the right button. Hello, Katie. Are you there?
I am. How are you?
I'm doing well. Sorry about the confusion there. I was pulling up another page. Welcome to the program again. Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Wills, President of the American Federation of Teachers Service Personnel Union in Raleigh County. Katie, how long have you held that position?
Actually, it hasn't even been a year yet. It's been right at 6 months.
And what prompted you to get involved with the American Federation of Teachers?
Well, last year, right before the work stoppage, we had started attending some meetings because there were some incentives going on to get people to go to the meetings monthly.
Right.
And through that, we just started building a personal relationship with the people in charge there. They were just absolutely wonderful. They were always clued in on what was going on. They kept us informed. Through that, we decided to join AFT. Then last year, after the work stoppage, I decided to go ahead and try for president.
And here you are.
Here I am.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, let's do. Let's just go ahead and look at some of the larger sections, the things that are really causing trouble with House Bill, or Senate Bill, rather, 451. And that is, first thing we're going to talk about is increased class sizes. The current class size is capped at right around 25 students right now. And this bill proposes increasing that size cap in the first grade through the sixth grade to 28 students with an extension of up to 31 students. And I think we can all agree, and I know any of the teachers are listening, probably nodding their head when I say this, increased class size equates with less individual attention teacher to student.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, indeed. A lot of people don't think three extra students sounds like a lot, but when you're actually active in the classroom, you find out you need every minute you can get with the students you already have.
The next thing we have coming up with, and if you can expound on it, I would appreciate it. The charter schools, the real issue with the charter schools, it devolves into a number of different things. Number one, accreditation of faculty. You want to talk a little bit about that first?
Definitely. With charter schools, and there's a lot of this still panning out, because if charter schools were to pass, if charter schools were to take on in the state of West Virginia, legislature would then sit down and go ahead and write out the bills and the qualifications required for teachers. As of right now, with charter schools in the past and the way it stands, teachers do not require any qualifications to teach your student through the charter school system. This includes degrees. Teachers would not have to have degrees. A student could graduate yesterday and become a teacher today. Another thing that concerns us is the fact there are no laws against someone with a criminal record, and that being anything, whether it was a DUI, whether it was a sex offender, whatever, there is no bill stopping those from going into the classroom and becoming the teacher as well.
And again, you know, one of the things that we've got to look at that causes a great deal of concern is the fact that charter schools, whether it's a brick and mortar, whether it's a physical plant, a brick and mortar building, or if it's an online or virtual type thing, that takes money, that's public funding that they're getting. But they're not run as a public entity, they're run as a private entity. And again, teachers are going to nod their heads. There's not been any definitive evidence that's been documented to show any proven increase overall in student achievement as compared to what's going on in the public school system. So we take money that's already desperately needed from the public school system and we turn it over to this. And I don't want to say by night. I don't want to say haphazard. I'm sure there are people in the charter school business that take it very seriously. But overall, I don't necessarily think that would be the case.
Right. And in this, I definitely am not putting down anybody. I want to hats off to all the teachers, whether it be private school, charter school, or public school.
Exactly.
However, if charter schools were to come through, like you said, it does pull funding from our public schools. Now, a lot of people were confused on the charter school situation. They didn't know if they meant all the schools would become charter, if some throughout the state would become charter, what they would be losing when the charter schools come in, and et cetera. What the bill is looking to pass, originally it was 50% of the students' parents and 50% of the staff would have to vote and agree before the school could become a charter. When they rewrote the bill yesterday or day before yesterday, they changed that to where they have no say-so. It's all up to the Senate and House. As long as they vote on it, the charter schools go in. They are looking at 2 charter schools per year until the state of West Virginia hosts 7 charter schools. The funding would come from our public education funds. They have a certain number of families that can apply for grants to send their students to the school. The rest of it comes from government grants, which they will not have at first. They actually have to achieve some guidelines and qualifications before they can apply to those. So that means all that's coming from our taxpayers' money, at least for the first year, possibly even longer.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
What I was going to ask about was the next thing that we're going to talk about in terms of Senate Bill 451 has to do with the educational savings accounts, or the ESAs. Now, the ESA is supposed to allow, and I'm sure this is probably still in the legislation, to allow a voucher-type program for parents to get 75% of the pupil allowance to use this to send their child to a private school or to homeschool them. And this money, again, siphons from the public school system. Now, I'm not exactly sure I understand this, but the way I read this, mom and dad decide that they don't want their kid in the public school system, and they're going to, and they have found a charter school. So are they getting, do they have some kind of an average where we figure out, you know, the calculation of how much it's going to cost per pupil in said county, and then they give them 75% of that to seed money for a charter school? How exactly does that work? Do you know?
I know a little bit about it. I don't want to go into too much debt because I'm scared I will steer somebody wrong.
Sure.
However, whenever a charter school does go into action, if this bill were to pass, they would start off with a certain amount that they pull from the educational system. They will allot a number of families, which they will sit down and come up with that number that can apply for the vouchers.
Right.
There will be qualifications for that as well. Parents have to apply. It mostly goes out to your low-income Title I families. It does not pay for everything, which is another issue with charter schools. There's a lot of costs there, including textbook, education, transportation, which they do not have to provide. But the families that qualify for these vouchers, that's what the money will go toward, but they will still owe a little as well, whether it continues to get pulled through government funding or whether they have to come up with it out of pocket. That all gets decided after the legislature puts the bill into action.
Last thing we're going to talk about, because we're coming up on the quarter hour and I know you're pressed for time. Another one of the things that they talk about in Bill 451 is the elimination of seniority in reduction in force or transfers. And, you know, that was going to be based on certification and qualifications used in the hiring process. Now, I don't think that this is going to be something that pertains necessarily exclusively to the charter schools, right? This is about policy.
Correct.
Within the county.
Correct. Whether charter schools took over or not, this would be something that they would be able to just throw into our policy, even in the public school system. Working in a public school system, I am so grateful for the seniority rules. I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for seniority, I'm sure, because a lot of people think it's all about who you know, but they do this to keep it fair. In this situation, someone would not have to be qualified. Someone could come up, take your job, and send you elsewhere with no problem, all based on interviews, who you know, how well the superintendent or whoever holding that title likes you. It would totally do away with our chance of going, bidding on a job, and the person who's been there the longest getting that job. It would also, some would be based on qualifications, but it wouldn't, I'm trying to think of a way to word it, it would not be completely fair because those qualifications, once again, kind of relates back to the charter, they haven't been set in stone yet. We have no idea what those qualifications would be.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Katie Wills. Go ahead, Katie.
Oh, nope, you're fine. I was just going to say it all just boils down to who you talk to, what mood they're in that day, and how well they like you if seniority were to go away.
There's got to be order. There's got to be structure, and that is one of the most obvious and fair way to have it in place. Again, ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Katie Wills. Katie's president of the American Federation of Teacher Service Personnel Union here in Raleigh County. Katie, before you leave, is there any kind of speculation? What I'm guessing that the work stoppage will continue through tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I just got that word here about 15 minutes ago. The work stoppage is continuing into tomorrow because the Senate does have 24 hours to change their decision. And upon making their decision today, you immediately had members starting to change their minds. So we're a little leery to go back and tell them we're happy and then them go and change it right in the middle of our shifts tomorrow.
This is going to be an ongoing thing.
We want them to know we're serious and we want something set in stone.
So as it stands now, will all 55 counties be out tomorrow as well?
Well, 55 will be out, yes. Now, whether or not Putnam and a couple other counties will support their employees doing so or not, we're not 100% sure. We're still waiting on all the calls from the superintendents.
Right, because we know that John Hudson said that there would be school in Putnam County today, and I don't think the buses ever left the transportation area. So
no,
there wasn't
hats
school.
Off to all of them. They stood their ground.
And I'm expecting, well, we will hope and we'll wish that they remain resilient in what's going on. Katie, thank you for taking the time to be with us this evening and helping to try and clear some of the murkiness of this legislation up. Caitlin Wills, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to let you go teach your class. Thank you so much for being here with us on ACP.
Thank you.
Great stuff. In the interest of disclosure, I've known Katie since she was a wee little girl. She graduated from Chady High School, and she is as fine an example of what comes out of our public school systems as any there is. Thanks, Katie. We appreciate it tremendously. All right. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to change gears. Again, this thing we're in a state of flux. I got to get some new earbuds. Man, these things blow. We're in a state of flux right now. West Virginia politics on a state level is probably, you guys think Game of Thrones and House of Cards are cutthroat? You want to talk about corrupt cats? Oh, Chicago, sissy town. Detroit, babies. Jerk punk kids. The root of this evil, and I'm a Republican, and I'm going to call it anyway, is a cat by the name of Mitch Carmichael. Now, this is just a perspective, a conservative's perspective. Last year during the work stoppage, enough was enough, and they went for a pay raise. It was a clash of wills between Carmichael's Republican uniparty faction and the teachers of the state of West Virginia. And it was pretty acrimonious. And there were a lot of underhanded things that went on. But the end result was that Mitch Carmichael lost. He lost the battle. He lost face. He hasn't forgotten it. Sorry. So a number of the things that have been placed in this legislation have been fundamentally punitive. And it's only through the vigilance of West Virginia teachers, Mountain State teachers, and the AFT in going in there and dealing with this and being resilient. But politics, being what politics is, can be kind of tricky. And we live in a time where it doesn't matter the bad actor, whether it's a Democrat or whether it's a Republican, you know, it doesn't matter who the crook is. Once you reach a certain level of authority, it seems like, you know, even when you get caught, even when you get busted, not much happens to you. So we're going to have to be vigilant. And West Virginia teachers, stay solid. Stay solid. What happened last year can happen again. My prediction is it will happen again because of the outstanding level of solidarity we have among West Virginia educators and service personnel as well. It's all the time we've got to spend on that. So, moving on. What are we going to talk about now? I don't know. I do this every week. It's like, you know, I have no clue what we're going to talk about. Oh, something from Babylon B. Last week, you know, we talked about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. And they had a frequently asked questions, you know, splurge at the end of her page, talking about the Green New Deal. What's the deal? What's going to go on with that? And it ran into a little trouble early on when this frequently asked questions on the details was placed on AOC. That's what they call her now. I think it's AOC, but I'm going to say AOC. On the AOC's website, and then they pulled it down after people looked at it. And for a while, and I'm not making this part up. Some of it is made up, but not this part. For a while, her people claimed that the frequently asked questions section never existed. And when directly asked about it herself, Ocasio-Cortez has not answered questions, claiming not to speak English. No English, a wide-eyed Ocasio-Cortez told reporters who asked why the FAQ appeared and then why it was removed from her site. Why did the original frequently asked say the Green New Deal would provide economic security for those unwilling to work, persisted one reporter. What's that got to do with the environment? Cortez shrugged her shoulders as if she couldn't understand and replied, "Ni jaba no bada." When confronted with the fact that she had been seen speaking English just moments before, Ocasio-Cortez stared back as if she couldn't comprehend and said, "Bupa kambak, ni atam bupa." This didn't deter most of the reporters, one even asking her, "How much will this proposal cost?" Just as she escaped down a garbage chute. Poor Alex. She's got some trouble. Bless her heart. Now, before anybody gets excited, that didn't really happen. That's from a place called Babylon Bee. And that's what, you know, so just don't get too excited. Andrew McCabe, former acting director of the FBI, fired for lying. Well, no, we can't do that now. We don't have a whole lot of time now. But we will get into that. He did an interview. 60 Minutes, and he got caught up a couple different lies. We have some clips from that. We also have a very illuminating clip from former, I think he's a D.C. District Attorney, Joseph DeGeneva, federal attorney, Joseph DeGeneva, who watched the interview, and he called into WTOP in D.C. to talk about McCabe's interview on 60 Minutes. That's a great clip. Runs a little long, but again, very enlightening. Once again, I want to bring this up while we're talking about the work stoppage throughout the state. What's gone on here, just as it went on last year, and I think that this is important that we bring this up because it's kudos, really, to the county superintendents. What they've done is they have simply canceled school. And you're probably thinking, well, yeah, they canceled it because nobody, everybody's on strike. Well, true, but if the superintendents did not cancel school, what then? Well, then you've got teachers going out to walk picket lines in front of the school property. You've got people coming in to see to the needs of the kids, and that's going to cause a problem. That's going to cause enmity. I think it's a very wise move. I think it's a very prescient move on the part of the county superintendents to play it this way. Now, when the work stoppage happened last year, which was about for a week, and the days, you know, we tacked them on at the end of the year to make up for it, just like you would a snow day. And that's how I think the superintendents are treating it now. And I think it's a very wise move. And it also shows a great deal of solidarity and support from, you know, the county level for teachers that are out there on those lines. And that's great stuff. We're going to go to break a little bit early. All this talking, quite frankly, makes a man thirsty. We will be back with more of ACP and the deal with Lion SOB, Andy McCabe, right after this brief musical interlude. But first, a message from our friends at Redstone Rehabilitation Services. Back after this.
Time in my life when I was down so low, a mosquito wouldn't even bite me. I lost my job, my four-wheel drive. I even got thrown out of my trailer. All because of one thing. Freebasing cocaine. That's all my life was basing. Nothing else. I was on that last lap with that checkered flag about to weigh me on into hell. But I got lucky. I got in a rehab program down there at Redstone Arsenal down there in Alabama. And with them people helping me, well, that smoky white devil is no longer a part of my life. And I can proudly say that today, I do not freebase cocaine. Now, I'll take a drink now. I will take a drink, but I do not freebase cocaine. But, you know, I'll take a drink, and I might even smoke a little reef. You know, I like to smoke reefer. You know, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything. But as far as basing goes, I don't do it. Now, I'll do some toot now. Don't get me wrong. I will do some toot, you know. You know, if you party and everything, somebody comes up and give it to you, it's impolite not to take it there. So me and my girlfriend, Sally, we, you know, we party, man. I tell you, we do party. So, you know, I will do some toot. We do, you know, on a good weekend there, we call a bunch of friends over there, we do about an 8-ball of toot there. But we don't base. I do not freebase cocaine. We'll make that clear. I don't do it. Well, I tell you what, that drinking now, I will not drink that tequila. Now, I tell you what, the last time I drank it, I got wild and everything. My girlfriend said I beat up on Sally. And, you know, when I done that, it hurt me a lot more than it does her when I'm beating the hell out of her. So I don't drink that tequila now. I don't do any basing. I do not freebase. That's two things I don't do. I'm no longer part of my life. But I tell you what, I will tequila. I admit, I do drink it about twice a year, you know. I drank some tequila, and of course, when I do drink it, Sally, you better look out, because you know I'm going to go upside that head now. Oh, but basing I don't do. I heard somewhere coffee's bad for you, that caffeine mess. I read that somewhere. So I do that speed, get back up again. Of course, you got to get ready the next day and going all day long, part of that thing. But as far as basing goes, I don't do that. I will not freebase cocaine. I don't touch it. Unless it's my birthday, something, man, a special occasion, I'll get out that pipe and I'll base. I won't freebase cocaine if I'm behind the wheel of a car. I won't do it. If I'm driving the car, I won't do it. Unless, you know, you stop in traffic, you know you're going to be there a while, ain't nothing on radio, I'll pull out that pipe and I'll base. But I will not freebase cocaine if I'm in church. I will not freebase cocaine in church, unless, you know, it's during a hymn and I don't like something. I might get out that pipe and I'll base in it. I admit it. And I won't do it during the sermon, though. I will not freebase cocaine in church during the sermon unless I've heard it before. Unless, you know, I've heard that song. I won't hear the same thing again. You just won't sit there and do nothing. So I'll get out that pipe and I'll base. But I won't do it. I will not do it at the altar. I will not. I can tell you right now, I've been through that rehab, and freebasing no longer part of my life.
This message brought to you by the Redstone Drug Rehabilitation Center, reminding you to just say nope to dope.
Oh, yeah. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective. We're back after that brief musical interlude. And our sponsor, the good folks down at Redstone Rehabilitation Services. Oh, by the way, before I forget, Kurt Cox. Haven't heard anything about Kurt. Don't know what's going on with him. But we're going to have to follow up on that as well. As we know, the deep state has, and we have proof positive of it now, has been conducting an ongoing attempted coup d'etat against the Trump administration and a democratically elected sitting president. Sunday, Andy McCabe, former acting director of the FBI, did an interview on CBS because he's hawking a book called Threat, How the FBI Protects America and Her Citizens in the Age of Terrorism and Trump. A lot of obfuscation, a lot of back and forth. And if you haven't seen or heard the interview, go check it out. Go check it out. And the thing is, these guys, they always do. And Andy McCabe's no different. Their arrogance. At some point, you know, I think they know that their story's not straight, that there may be an inconsistency here or some kind of a chink or weakness, you know, in their firewall, which is what basically these stories are. And there was one. First off, what we're going to do is we're going to talk to, I'm going to bring up the clip that I promised you, Joe DeGeneva. He's a former federal attorney in the D.C. district, I think. And everything's going to be balky right now, so we'll try one more time here. And no, it's not going to work. You guys are so cool, man. Blog Talk. I am loving me some Blog Talk right about now. So, what else has been going on with you guys? This is okay. Finally, we got it. Again, I apologize for taking long. This is kind of a long clip. It's about 15 minutes, worth every minute. If it starts getting a little duller, it drags. And there are some places, if I feel called upon to stop, we'll just stop and pick up with whatever we were talking about. Joseph DeGeneva.
Joe, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Great to have you back with us. You know, this 60 Minutes interview with Deputy Director, FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, former, since fired, of course, aired last night. And it was kind of, you know, it's kind of, it retreaded a lot of things that we knew, but it really, I think, expressed for the American public in clear detail that you had a real effort inside the FBI and the Justice Department to get rid of, to take out the President of the United States. That was my takeaway. What was yours?
Well, since July 5th, 2016, when James Comey illegally exonerated Hillary Clinton, it has been obvious that the Obama FBI and Justice Department were corrupt. What you saw last night on 60 Minutes, coupled with Mr. McCabe's new book, was a signed confession that they violated the law, that they committed subversion and sedition against the President of the United States. They wanted Hillary Clinton to be president. She lost. They had to figure out a way to get rid of Donald Trump. And so they created a fake investigation based on no facts whatsoever. You will notice that during that lengthy interview last night, all you got was the conclusion from McCabe that they had a basis for investigating the president. Prior to the firing of Comey, there was no basis. And indeed, Scott Pelley never asked him to articulate what the basis was. Although Scott Pelley thought he scored a coup, what he did was he revealed the coup. And he looked like a fool, as did Robin Roberts on ABC in the other case involving Smollett.
Jussie Smollett.
Whatever you want to say about Scott Pelley in 60 Minutes, they accidentally performed a public service in the service of the citizens of the United States. Comey, McCabe, Baker, Strzok, Page all need to be behind bars. And the worst nightmare just happened. Bill Barr walked into the building this morning at 9th and Constitution.
You know, Joe, I don't really know how Andrew McCabe could sit there and tell us that he had a rationale to believe that the president had worked with the Russians to get elected in light of the fact that, okay, let's pretend the FBI is the dispassionate law enforcement agency. You have two political organizations, the Senate Intel Committee and the House Intel Committee, who just wrapped up investigations over the course of the last few months, and both concluded that there was no evidence of collusion whatsoever. How could he sit there and claim that the FBI had the evidence?
Well, I think he's getting very bad legal advice. You can't. The fact is that Mr. McCabe is already under criminal investigation by the Justice Department for his four lies, three under oath.
Right.
It's just you can't do it. I mean, the all of the available evidence, actually from the very beginning, almost 2 years ago, has been that there was no collusion, that there was no conduct by the president or any of his close associates having anything to do with the Russians. The Manafort thing is completely unrelated to all of this, so
right.
It's nonsensical. McCabe is doing everything he can to make a public argument against his indictment. He's trying to say this is what they used to call gray mail, where you throw out the threat of using classified information to prevent your indictment. He's doing the same thing.
Well, let me get your Joe.
Well, I don't know that Congressman Jim Jordan. I'm not going to let him get away with it. But go ahead.
Well, let me get Joe a little worked up here, because I want to play some of the audio of what he claimed last night about how certain he was to investigate the president. Here he is.
Are you saying that the president is in league with the Russians?
I'm saying that the FBI had reason to investigate that. Right. The existence of an investigation doesn't mean someone is guilty. And I would say, Scott, if we failed to open an investigation under those circumstances, we wouldn't be doing our jobs.
When you decided to launch these two investigations, was the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, on board with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he said Rod Rosenstein. He pulls him right into this thing,
yeah.
Too, Joe.
Well, Rosenstein is a thug, and he is the worst example of when career bureaucrats become politically motivated and care only about their career. Rosenstein will be gone shortly. Thank God the Department of Justice will no longer have the stench of somebody who engaged in sedition and subversion himself. Rosenstein is just a pathetic public servant. As far as McCabe goes, you'll notice that in answer to that question to Scott Pelley, he never articulates what the basis was.
Right.
For investigating the president, because there was none.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you myself. It's like, okay, we haven't seen this kind of corruption on the front page of the paper since Hoover's FBI went after Dr. King. But what are they even alluding to that would be at a reason that you would then say perhaps we should wear a wire into the White House and tape a sitting president without him knowing?
If you hate Donald Trump as much as those people did, and love Hillary Clinton as much as those people did, you will do anything. McCabe,
go to jail the rest of your life.
And Comey and Baker all believed that they could do anything they want. And the reason, the insurance policy, by the way, was the fake investigation of the president to remove him from office. And the reason was they didn't want people to know that they had illegally exonerated Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
And that they had conducted illegal FISA taps, and that they had unmasked people, and that they had leaked those names to the press. And because McCabe was responsible for leaking the Flynn-Kislyak call to the papers, that was a violation of the Espionage Act.
Well, I want to play for our audience two distinct things real quickly here. Cut 17, this is about Rod Rosenstein trying to remove the president from office. Take a listen.
Rosenstein was actually openly talking about whether there was a majority of the cabinet who would vote to remove the president.
That's correct. Counting votes or possible votes.
And this is here, cut 19. This is Andrew McCabe talking about Rod Rosenstein wearing a wire into the Oval Office to record the president.
The point of Rosenstein wearing the wire into a meeting with the president was what? What did he hope to obtain?
I can't characterize what Rod was thinking or what he was hoping at that moment. But the reason you would have someone wear a concealed recording device would be to collect evidence. And in this case, what was the true nature of the president's motivation in calling for the firing of Jim Comey?
They didn't like that he fired somebody he was allowed to, and they wanted to throw him out of office, Joe.
Well, again, McCabe is committing ritual suicide. And you'll note that when the Justice Department, on behalf of Rod Rosenstein, issued a statement the other day, Mr. Rosenstein never denies that he had a conversation with McCabe about doing the 25th Amendment and wearing a wire. He simply says he never authorized anybody to wear a wire. Well, you wouldn't have to authorize yourself, would you?
All right, more with Joe DeGeneva. Hold on, Joe. We're going to talk to you a little bit more about this. Also, the president's declaration of a national emergency. Some people questioning the legality of it. We'll let Joe answer that, too. All right, we're talking to Joe DeGeneva, legal analyst and former U.S. attorney to the District of Columbia. The remainder on this, Joe, just get your last impressions on Andrew McCabe's interview. I think that this is a gigantic statement that the media should be paying attention to. There was a real effort to get rid of the president of the United States on without any basis for doing it. Any remainders for you from the 60 Minutes interview?
Well, this has been fairly obvious for almost 2 years that this was a fake investigation. I mean, anybody who's ever been a federal investigator knows that this was a joke from day one, and it's all been an outrageous plot. What it shows is that Bill Barr, who was in the building today, will, in all likelihood, impanel a federal grand jury, and all these folks will have an opportunity to testify before it, most of whom will take the Fifth because they have no choice.
Wow.
Does Rod Rosenstein leave at the conclusion of the Mueller investigation or sooner than that?
He will leave within the next 2 weeks.
He needs to leave because we're finding, it was not a joke. I'm really seriously considering going in here and taping a sitting president.
Yeah, his presence is really hurting the reputation, too, of the FBI and the Justice Department. All right, Joe, I want to move over to the issue of a national emergency. A bunch of the president's critics, to include Republicans, are making the case, though, he can't do this. This is not a real emergency. You can't declare a national emergency. What do you make of it?
Well, first of all, it's fairly obvious.
Well, we'll drop it off right there, the national emergency, and his opinions on that for another time. Back to what we're talking about here with Andy McCabe. And this guy's written the book, and we're supposed to believe everything he says in the book. The guy got fired for lying. And it wasn't that they made up that he was lying. He actually lied, and they caught him, and they fired him. They fired him within hours of dude getting ready to retire and collect his pension. Now, all that went away because he lied. There's no question about it. And in this interview, his recent statements, and that's what I'm talking about, I've got to figure out what to pull up. Contradict what he said testifying under oath. We'll play a little bit of this interview. And the important part is we're going to cut it off. It's another 8-minute clip, but we're not playing. We're playing about half of it to get to the point of what we're talking about in terms of when the investigation was opened on the president, what he said under oath in front of Congress, and what he says 60 Minutes, kind of different.
Extraordinary revelations. In his first TV interview since being fired, the former FBI's former director is telling 60 Minutes why he launched investigations into President Trump. If you remember, Andrew McCabe was a career official at the Justice Department who oversaw the Bureau's investigations into Russia's election meddling and Hillary Clinton's emails. He took over as acting FBI director in May of 2017 after James Comey was fired. In his new book, The Threat, How the FBI Protects America in the Age of Terror and Trump, McCabe describes extraordinary measures Justice Department officials took after Comey's firing. He says he was concerned about the president's possible ties to Russia.
Now, remember last March, about one day before McCabe was scheduled to retire, he was fired by then Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The Justice Department accused McCabe of misleading investigators about sharing information with the media. Now, he denies any wrongdoing, but as a result of his firing, McCabe did not receive his full benefits and is considering a lawsuit. Well, now, in an interview with Scott Pelley for Sunday's 60 Minutes, McCabe discussed a meeting with the president in the Oval Office just hours after Comey was fired.
I was speaking to the man who had just run for the presidency and won the election for the presidency, and who might have done so with the aid of the government of Russia, our most formidable adversary on the world stage. And that was something that troubled me greatly.
How long was it after that that you decided to start the obstruction of justice and counterintelligence investigations involving the president?
I think the next day I met with the team investigating the Russia cases, and I asked the team to go back and conduct an assessment to determine where are we with these efforts and what steps do we need to take going forward. I was very concerned that I was able to put the Russia case on absolutely solid ground in an indelible fashion, that were I removed quickly or reassigned or fired, that the case could not be closed or vanish in the night without a trace. I wanted to make sure that our case was on solid ground, and if somebody came in behind me and closed it and tried to walk away from it, they would not be able to do that without creating a record of why they'd made that decision.
You wanted a documentary record.
That's right.
That those investigations had begun because you feared that they would be made to go away.
That's exactly right.
The White House responded to the opening of that investigation, calling it a completely baseless investigation. But now we're hearing directly from McCabe as he tells his own story with Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes. Scott, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, here's the deal. Just to recap what he said. Here's the chronology. On May 9th of 2017, Jim Comey is fired. On the evening of May 9th, 2017, Andrew McCabe meets with the President of the United States. He's going to be taking over as acting director of FBI. May 10th, 2017, McCain meets with his team. He opens the obstruction event. And you know what the thing that bothers me? All these troubled patriots. Everybody's troubled. He's catchy. You know, Jim Comey was troubled over this whole Russia thing. And every time you talk to somebody, they're troubled. I mean, it's kind of like the old shocked and appalled routine, you know? I'm shocked and appalled. Okay, all these cats are always troubled. That's a weasel. You just got finished listening to a weasel. So on the 10th of 2017, McCabe meets with his team and he opens up the obstruction investigation. And on the afternoon of May 10th, 2017, Andy McCabe again meets with the President of the United States. That's the sequence as described by Andrew McCain in his 2019 book excerpt. His decision to open a criminal obstruction investigation May 10th, 2017, corresponds with emails that went back and forth between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok in their text messages. However, on May 11th, 2017, the day after those two meetings with President Trump and the day after Andrew McCabe opened a criminal investigation, McCabe was testifying to Congress about Russia interference in the election. His story was entirely different in 2017. On May 11th, 2017, 2 days after Jim Comey was fired, and after back-to-back meetings with the President of the United States, Andrew McCabe, under oath, told Congress, not only has President Trump not interfered or obstructed the investigation, but there has been zero discussion between himself, the President, and or the White House about the investigation. Now, McCabe says that they opened the obstruction investigation the day before his testimony. Completely different story and contradicting himself from his 2017 congressional testimony where he told Congress he hadn't talked to the president about the investigation, and the president not only hadn't interfered with it, didn't even influence it. They'd never even talked about it. All I can say is pants on fire. And Attorney General Barr, William Barr, they say is a bulldog, that he's a go-getter, and that he's going to run this stuff to ground. I am skeptical. But we'll see. You never know. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap things up a little early tonight. ACP is heard, because I'm out of gas. ACP is heard here twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And we do that through the studios at blogtalkradio.com. You go there, type in Patriot Nation Radio, and you'll find ACP. We also have a recorded version of the program that goes out over the Talk America Radio Network, talkamericaradio.org. You go there, and there are a couple of different audio streaming channels, the Liberty and the Justice Stream, ACP heard various times throughout the day and week on either one of those. Thank you guys for the time to visit and tell you what's going on. Thank you to all the West Virginia educators out there, the outstanding job that you do. We are on top of this here at ACP. We'll stay on top of it. It's an ongoing thing. I expect it'll be ongoing on Thursday when we take to the microphone, and we will get as much information available to you then as we have. Thank you so much for the opportunity to spend some time with you. We'll be back on Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. God bless you, and God bless America.